This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hello out there and welcome to episode 43 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
I feel like that gets you by surprise every time. I know there's something about it. Like there's like an instant, like a nanosecond pause there, like you're confused.
I'm not sure if I'm going to say I'm Will Smith or William Smith.
What are the facts that would change that would make a difference in whether or not you would
say
Will?
It's completely intuitive.
I see. So sometimes, some weeks, it's like your gut says, you know what, I'm going to be Will this week.
Yeah.
I got it. Okay. Speaking of this week, this goes to air on Monday, November 6th, 2017. We would like to say while we have a chance, we'd like to say happy or, you know, solemn Veterans Day, which is going to be on Saturday, the 11th. And Will has a special salutation to give, and that is...
On Friday is November 10th, and November 10th, 1775, in Tun Tavern, Philadelphia, was the birth date and place of the Marine Corps.
That's right. So, hang on. What's the deal with when you go to the Marine Corps, the thing where you had to put things on the red table? Like, I watched a YouTube video on, like, you know, when you go and like they're buzzing your hair off, but you got to, like, there's something about you put your wallet on a red table. What's the deal with that?
It's just a psychological exercise. When you first get off the bus, they immediately start training you to do simple tasks in unison. So everybody, you know, take out your wallet with your right hand. Put it down on the red table, because you're going to have, you know, we're all civilians, so somebody's doing it with their left hand, somebody doesn't do it on time, so it's from the very moment that you get off the bus, they're starting to train you like robots.
It's very psychologically intimidating.
It's very intimidating.
From any standpoint, yeah. Really, that's interesting. So 1775, it's the birth date of the United States Marine Corps.
November 10th, 1775, my Marine Corps came alive.
It was good for Chesty Puller. Was Chesty Puller a Marine? No, Chesty Puller was not a Marine. Chesty Puller was a Marine. He was the Marine. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Chesty Puller was a Marine.
Yeah, he was a Marine.
Yeah. Anyway, lots of good things to talk about on this podcast. Oh, I actually left out my buddy Dennis's birthday is on November 6th. So that's along with... that's today, actually, on the air date. So, happy birthday, Dennis.
Happy birthday, Dennis.
All right. Our first topic of conversation comes to us from our neighbors to the north in Alberta, Canada. This is a story about a worker charged with the assault of a nursing home resident. So, two staff members of Keelum Healthcare Center in Alberta, Canada, have been charged with an assault of an 88-year-old woman in long-term care. A 53-year-old woman is facing three counts of assault, and a 39-year-old woman is charged with a single count of assault. In a statement, the Keelum Healthcare Center said the allegations had prompted, quote, a full investigation or review of the matters that will result in an action plan based on results. So there's not a lot to this article in terms of the facts that led to the actual altercation, along with the actual physical injuries surrounding the assault. What's important to note in this, again, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, is that a nursing home can be responsible for the injuries resulting from its employees intentionally striking a resident. So again, there's basically, I want to point out a couple things. When we say nursing home neglect, when we say nursing home abuse, Many times the facts overlap. Many times the claims will overlap. But from a general standpoint, neglect is going to be actions or inactions by a nursing home or a staff member of a nursing home that result in an injury where the intent was not to produce the injury. Okay, so for example, if a nursing home resident fails to reposition a resident that a staff member fails to reposition.
If a staff member,
fails to reposition a resident on a regular basis, and that resident develops a bed sore and then later passes due to infection because of that bed sore, if the staff member did not intend death by an infection by a bed sore because by the non-repositioning, then she did not have the true intent to cause that result, and we would call that negligence. The person deviated from a normal standard of care, and that deviation resulted in an injury of the resident. Now, when we talk about abuse, generally the differentiating fact between neglect and abuse, not to say that these things don't overlap many times, but the differentiating factor is that level of intent. If the staff member takes a lamp off of a coffee table and bashes it over the head of the resident, we can truly assume, we can definitely say that staff member intended to assault the resident. And that's where intent comes into play. They intended the consequences. Now, nursing homes generally are going to be responsible for the negligent acts of their staff, okay? That's a concept in the law called vicarious liability. The person mopping the store at Walmart, if they don't put the sign out, you're probably going to be able to sue Walmart through the vicarious liability under the law. Walmart is responsible for the torts committed by its employees, the same way that a nursing home is responsible for the torts like negligence committed by its staff members. Now, why is the differentiation between neglect and abuse? Why is the differentiation between intent and non-intent really? Is that a nursing home is not going to be responsible for the intentional torts, for the most part, not going to be responsible for the intentional torts of its staff unless there's some level of constructive or actual knowledge that the staff member has a propensity or a likelihood that the staff member will commit that particular tort. Okay, so for example, if in this case, in this Canadian nursing home, if the nursing home had reason to believe based on previous experiences of assault against a resident or a criminal record involving assaults, particularly of elderly persons, then it's possible that a civil lawsuit might be made against the nursing home, not just the employee, but the nursing home, due to the staff member's tort. And sometimes those cases can be a little bit more difficult because, of course, nursing homes, obviously, we can both attest to this, fight tooth and nail and deny every claim, negligence, abuse, everything they can. Mm-hmm. And it's more difficult to put the pieces together to create a case against a nursing home for the intentional torts of the residents. However, it's not impossible. I'm just saying that the nursing home really puts up fights in those cases. But we'll revisit this case in a future podcast. But that's what strikes me from this article. Again, there's not a lot to it in terms of the facts, but just recognize that depending on where you're at, depending on the facts, if your loved one has been assaulted, physically assaulted, punched, kicked, pushed down by a staff member, there is going to be almost certainly a case against the employee. The issue will be whether or not the nursing home can be held responsible for it as well if it's an intentional tort. So that's, like Forrest Gump says, that's all I got to say about that. Will, where are we heading to next?
So next we're going to New Jersey, and we're going to talk about an issue that we've actually dedicated a whole section to in the past, and that has to do with cameras, surveillance cameras inside nursing homes. And here in New Jersey Attorney General Christopher Perino launched Safe Care Cam back in December of 2016, and they're working, the AG's office of New Jersey is working to expand the use of surveillance cameras from private homes to nursing homes across the state. Safe Care Cam was designed to document the care provided to individuals in need of specialty care, particularly those with dementia, but it's got a lot of privacy concerns. So essentially what was going on is this Safe Care Cam was open to it was open to families who hired live-in caretakers or certified home health aides. And what it does is it lent cameras, surveillance cameras, you know, the little nanny cams, little cameras that are in, you know, some teddy bear that's on the mantle or something, to people to put in their own homes where they had hospice, they had home health, or something like that. And so what they're doing now is they're trying to expand it to nursing homes. And in this article, there's a particular husband that they're talking to, and what he's saying is that, you know, he wishes that this had been available for his family when his wife, who had dementia, was put in the nursing home, because apparently she shattered her femur twice within 3 weeks.
Within 3 weeks. That's crazy.
Yeah. She underwent two painful surgeries that involved her broken leg, with fixing a broken leg with plates and screws. And they really didn't learn about what happened until they hired a lawyer. And the lawyer was saying that if they had had cameras in her room, they could have seen, you know, her falling, the CNAs picking her up, putting her back in the bed, her falling again, the CNAs picking her up, putting her back in the bed. So they could have documented all of these falls and the nursing home failing to act. However, there are still issues with actually placing, and this article points this out, placing cameras in nursing homes, because the law in the state of New Jersey is silent on it. And the fact that it's silent doesn't mean that you can do it, because there are still a lot of privacy concerns. And I think that one of the representatives of the nursing home point out that, hey, this is private property. If you want to put a camera in your own home to look at home health care that you're getting, that's one thing. But a lot of these residents share rooms with other residents. You know, it's not as though a camera, even outside of the room, will only track a specific resident. It may catch glimpses of another resident, and that's a privacy issue, too.
Both under federal and state law, most often.
Yeah, under federal and state law. So, yeah, it would have, you know, it'd be nice, especially in a situation where people are constantly falling, and you can document that, but it's still a huge privacy issue. So we're going to be following this pretty closely. I'm curious as to what happens with the AG's office rolling out this this program to try to expand to nursing homes, because I can guarantee you there's going to be a pushback from the nursing home industry.
Yeah. So what I want to kind of spend the next few minutes talking about here is an issue that has to do with what's called in the law a force majeure event. Generally, in the law of contracts, individuals that have contracted with another have basically exchanged promises. I promise to pay you $500. You promise to provide me with a used Toyota truck. I promise to pay you $1,500 a month. You promise to provide nursing home care to my loved one each month. So you have an exchange of promises. There are going to be times in which promises cannot be fulfilled. If this is done based on the negligence, or if it's done on, based on reasons that are within the control of a party, then they have done what's called breach. They have breached the contract. So, for example, I paid you $500 for a Toyota truck, and the Toyota truck is missing a wheel, or the Toyota truck is, you know, doesn't work. I've paid you $1,500 a month to take care of my mother in this nursing home, and you don't have a bed for her. There's going to be times in which the individual or the party has breached the contract. There are going to be times, I'm getting to a point somewhere, I promise. There will be times where a party cannot fulfill their promise. A party cannot fulfill the obligations under the contract due to forces that are beyond the control of either party. And these are going to be generally called force majeure events, acts of God, basically. I think that's French, force majeure. Will didn't take French. He actually took what's called Appalachian in high school as his first language. His second language was English. Mm-hmm. But anyway, force majeure event. A force majeure event is going to be something like a tornado, a hurricane, or explosions, riots, actually. I mean, my first job as an attorney was...
Earthquake
was for a was an international law firm that's based in Paris, France, and a force majeure event in many of their contracts is going to be public strikes or labor strikes or riots based on labor, mm-hmm. which happens a lot in France, where, you know, you can't make it to work because the subway workers have gone on strike. You can't take the train. So obviously we are still recovering from the horrendous results of Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma, and to some extent Hurricane Jose. So we all are familiar with the images, particularly from Harvey, in which there were flooded nursing homes, where nursing home residents were sitting in waist-deep water. The question that I would like to pose, and we would like to answer, is what is the liability, both in terms of breach of contract and in terms of negligence, with regard to what's the nursing home's obligations to make sure that those residents are not in waist-deep water and that they're transferred safely to another location. The law is going to vary from state to state, but you have to understand that a force majeure event, by definition, is something that's out of the control of the nursing home. You know, a nursing home should be responsible for having backup generators because it's foreseeable and it's reasonable to assume that power is going to go out for one reason or another. It's not foreseeable. It's not reasonable for a nursing home to think that if, you know, you're located in a place that doesn't get Category 5 hurricanes, that you're going to not only get a Category 5 hurricane, but you're going to be right on the eye of it, that you're going to get the full brunt of it. And so... you know, whether or not the individual nursing home that your loved one is in, whether in Florida or Texas or Louisiana or wherever it is, it's going to depend on what was likely foreseeable, what could have, you know, what would have been in the reasonable abilities of that nursing home to prevent an injury, to prevent the lack of care to your loved one.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, clearly... this nursing home in Dickinson, and I remember the picture. I posted it on Facebook. It was a very awful picture. In Texas, Dickinson, Texas. Old women sitting around this nursing home with water all the way up to their waist. Clearly, the nursing home's not going to be responsible for injuries suffered from the actual hurricane, you know, or the immediate aftermath, but their reaction to it could start to open them up for liability. So, for example, if you can imagine an extreme scenario where a hurricane comes and the entire staff and all the owners of the nursing home just throw their hands up and go, well, that's a wash, and they walk away and leave the residents there, that's going to open them up to some liability. So, right.
Yeah, not heeding if a nursing home is in a location where there's a mandatory evacuation,
mm-hmm.
and they do not evacuate those nursing home residents in a reasonable fashion, there's a possibility that there's liability if those nursing home residents are injured if they were forced to stay because the nursing home did not take action to move them.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be if a nursing home is located in a floodplain where there's knowledge that, you know, a category 2 or above would flood out the nursing home and they don't take precautions to get those residents out, there's possibilities. It's within the level of risk is within the foreseeability of that risk. So, the foreseeability of the risk is in proportion to what they should do, the reasonable steps that should be taken. And a lot of times, particularly like in this case with that Will is talking about, was that infamous picture where the residents are chest mm-hmm. deep. If it's the storm of the century, is the nursing home responsible for making sure that the nursing home facility itself is basically protected from a storm of the century? And there, I mean, I can see both sides of that argument. I think that for the most part, the nursing home, if they're fortified against the storm of the decade, then that's probably going to be good enough. Mm-hmm. And that if a resident is injured because of the storm of a century, it's a force majeure event, and they've done what they needed to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of what I wanted to say about that. That was based off of an article that we got that we were wanting to talk about in the previous couple of weeks, but we just never got around to it. But it's from when Hurricane Harvey first hit from Dixon, Texas. There was a picture that Will was talking about where the residents were in waist-deep water. Is tragic. Anyway.
So next we're going to Champaign County, in Illinois. Lots of cases coming out of Illinois. I don't know why that is. That's a tragedy. But so in this case, a 78-year-old woman was found unresponsive in the courtyard of this nursing home. The last time that she had contact with the staff was sometime around, 1:30, 1:40. And then 3.5 hours later, they find her outside. And this is the summertime, okay? They find her outside, unresponsive, in direct sunlight, extremely hot to the touch, with vomit on both sides of her face, and dead. And an investigation was launched into it, and the coroner made a determination that she died from hyperthermia. Not hypothermia, but hyperthermia, which is a heat stroke. She died from overheating. She had dementia. And as such, there was the report determined that the nurse and the CNA on duty at the time had failed to follow the proper procedures for safeguarding wandering residents, and also the protocol for door alarms. That's really all the article says. So one's kind of left with exactly what they did. I mean, one thing is when you've got residents like this who have dementia or are known to wander, they're like children. You should know where they are most of the time. Most of the time in any given hour, you should know what they are. There might be a 5 or 10 or maybe a 15-minute period there where you can't exactly say where they are, but that's pushing the limit. If you've got somebody like this, you should be able to say, oh, I know where she is. She's in the dining room. I know where she is. She's in her room watching television. I know where she is. She's walking down A hall or B hall or C hall. But for 3.5 hours, they didn't know where she was. Because this is the summertime, and if they had known that she was outside, they wouldn't have left her. and had they left her, it would have been negligence. One also has to wonder what they mean by a violation of the door alarm policies. So, you know, I don't know if they had the door propped open for some reason. I don't know if they disengaged an alarm because it kept going off. I'm not really sure. But essentially what happened to this poor lady is they weren't paying attention to where she was. They weren't checking on her. And she goes out into the courtyard and, you know, she has dementia. She doesn't know what she's doing. She doesn't know what's going on. She has no situational awareness. And she gets stuck in the sun. And she dies of a heat stroke. And it's, you know, it's a tragedy. The CNA was terminated, and the nurse was relocated. And the reason that the CNA got the harshest punishment is simply because the CNA should directly know at any given time where his or her resident is. The nurse has, you know, has the job of getting the medicine ready, passing it out. The CNA is directly responsible for the immediate care of that resident. So, you know, when you're a CNA, like I said, you know where your resident is at any given time. And they didn't in this case. And she died a horrific, horrific death. It reminds me of the horrible case that we had down here in Georgia of the hot car infant death.
Yeah.
In Cobb County, I mean, where this infant was left in the car by his father. The father was found guilty. They're working on the appeal now. I know the lawyers on both sides, and it's a...
Wasn't he, like, typing search queries about that at work during the day? Or is that fake news?
I can't remember what came down on that, other than a lot of that shouldn't have come in.
So it did happen, and just whether or not... It should have come in.
I think that was the issue. Although I think there was a question of whether or not it happened. I can't remember. Hmm. It was a horrible case. But what's even worse is just thinking about, you know, either that toddler or this old person essentially cooking in the hot sun and not being able to escape it for one reason or the other. It's just an awful, awful way to go out. I honestly think it's worse than freezing to death. But either way, yeah, it's a horrible thing, and you know, I can guarantee you facing a lawsuit right now.
Oh yeah.
But so now back to you, Rob. Where are we going now? Is it Illinois?
We're actually going to go to my hometown of Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh no.
As well as to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Old Milwaukee. Milwaukee. Remember that from Wayne's World where Alice Cooper explains where the name Milwaukee comes from?
Yeah.
And it's like the joke is that, like, how does he know the history of Milwaukee?
But yeah.
Anyway, I'm bringing these to your attention, fair viewer, fair listener. In Davidson County, this is a new task force was created to protect elders and to prosecute elder abuse, and the same thing in Wisconsin. So you have some states like Wisconsin and Tennessee, go Vols, that are responding to the rise in elder abuse cases across the country. So these are law enforcement bodies that are training their people to recognize and prosecute elder abuse. When you have other states, like we mentioned maybe a few weeks ago, Iowa, that are cutting the budget for, say, the ombudsman programs. So kudos to Wisconsin and Tennessee. And let me say this. So we're going to Tennessee. The Davidson County, Tennessee Assistant District Attorney's Office, led by Artie Griffin, and a task force involving law enforcement and adult protective services, have now reviewed 550 cases of elder abuse complaints so far this year, and they estimate that about 188 cases will be heard at the end of just this month. This is why the new task force is created, as a response to this high number. And they're actually high number of abuse cases here. And they're actually saying that down here it says Griffin, Artie Griffin, the district assistant district attorney, said she believes the number of elderly abused is much higher than what is reported because many people do not know that adult protective services even exists. Also, simply for the fact that the population of elderly is growing, with the baby boomers reaching 65 years or older now. With Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Attorney General, Brad Schimmel, announced the creation of the Attorney General's Task Force on Elder Abuse. The goal of the task force is to study the impact of elder abuse in Wisconsin and assess ways to improve outcomes for this growing population of citizens. The Wisconsin AG has exclaimed his excitement for the initiatives, which he believes will address the needs of Wisconsin seniors both now and for decades to come. So I just wanted to highlight those two states, in particular those two cities, with regard to being proactive in investigating and prosecuting cases of elder abuse in their respective states. So I think with that, going back to the hometown, we're going to drive south a little bit back to Atlanta, back to us, and say that I think that that concludes this particular episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Again, happy birthday to the Marines, right?
Happy birthday, Marines.
What will you say? How did y'all say happy birthday to each other?
We would just say happy birthday to each other.
Yeah. What about Semper Fi? Would y'all say that?
We would say Semper Fi, or, you know, we would, you know.
So, okay, hang on.
We would say Yut Yut.
Okay, okay, so Marines are jarheads.
Jarheads.
They are devil dogs.
Devil dogs. Teufelhunden. It comes from the Battle of Belleau Woods, where the Germans said that the Marines were demon dogs or devil dogs.
And then you're also leathernecks?
Leathernecks.
Okay.
That's from being out in the sun all the time and having high tights. And
what is the story behind Gung Ho? Do y'all say Gung Ho to each other? Because there was a G.I. Joe man who was a Marine. That was his specialty, was being a Marine, and his name was Gung Ho.
Gung Ho is a state of being. It's like somebody's a hard charger, or they're like really motivated. They're Gung Ho. I honestly don't know the history behind Gung Ho.
Okay,
it might be based on a lot of Marines take a lot from Japanese military for whatever reason. Especially nowadays after World War II, because we fought with them in the Pacific so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be a Japanese term, gung ho.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely Japanese, yeah. But I don't know why. Yeah, anyway, so why is your Marine Corps color red?
To show the world the blood we've shed.
And why is your Marine Corps color gold?
To show the world that we are bold.
And why is your Marine Corps color green?
To show the world we're lean and mean.
Okay.
Yeah. And also
mm-hmm.
blue.
Oh, I don't know that one.
To show the world that we are true.
Hmm. Yeah. I didn't know that. That was just red, gold, and blue. Anyway, I'm red, gold, and green. Anyway, all right. So, happy birthday, Marines. Happy birthday to Dennis. And hopefully everybody out there has a great Veterans Day / Armistice Day. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.